St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, was a delightful, varied, wonderful day. Up early, coffee with Lyndon, left on time for Spanish, 2 good hours, all 7 of us there. Mercedes Garden brilliant with yellow and purple crocus. Back at the White House, a bit of lunch, and then an hour reading the guest list for this afternoon and the achievements of all the awardees. The Fosbergs came a little before the party, and we had a quiet 30 minutes upstairs so that I could show him the Mary Cassatt. They looked in the viewer at the little picture of Ellen Barry's portrait of me with the yellow impressionist background. Said they loved it. I showed them the bust of Lyndon. He genuinely seemed to like it. But alas, there was not anything that he had brought down from New York that he or I either were really enthusiastic about acquiring for the White House. A very large copy, but it's about 5 by 8 feet. I think hanging it would pose a problem. And then a Winslow Homer that he thinks is great. A farm scene. The astronomical price tag of $125,000. I think it's too much to consider. I was very intrigued when I showed him the transparencies of the Whitridge, the Hill, and the Thomas Moran, one of which we may be able to get, first as a loan and then as a gift, from C.R. Smith for the White House. He and I both agreed on the Thomas Moran. Lyndon leans to the Whitridge. For several other things he had, a Benjamin West attribution, Western painter in the manner of Remington and Russell, but nothing that we were on fire about. Then it was time to go downstairs for the presentation ceremonies of the National Gallery of Arts Awards to 25 teachers, as John Walker described them, various levels of education, from kindergarten through college, who have been exceptionally successful in enriching the lives of young people through an understanding of the visual arts. The 25 award winners were in the front row. I joined them. John Walker made some very graceful remarks, having a kind word to say about Lyndon's interest in the arts, quoting him, "Art is a nation's most precious heritage," and saying, "At no time in our history have a president and a Congress done so much to create an America in which the arts have their proper place." I sat next to Paul Mellon, and when John Walker finished, he called off the names of the award winners, and I rose to congratulate each of them and hand them the really very handsome gold medal. $500 would come later. He read the citations for each of them, and they were a thrilling, varied lot, ranging from a very elderly and erudite Dr. Erwin Panofsky, one of the greatest living art historians, whose roster of achievements, awards, textbooks, and memberships, and such things as the British Academy, would cover a page, and Dr. Howard Conant, who occupies the same big league in the art world, but quite another side of America, a Mr. Wilbur Stillwell of Vermilion, South Dakota. Very name thrilled me, because I like to think that there are people all over who make it interesting and exciting for young people to get acquainted with art. And I like to include them all in. Vermilion, South Dakota, and Rosebud, Texas, Verbena, Alabama, not just the East Coast. And there was a couple, the John Sochers of Minneapolis, both teachers who between them had rolled up a total of 60 years teaching art. There were 2 Texas winners, Mrs. E.A. Smith of Houston and Miss Sybil Brown of San Antonio. We had lots to say to each other about my forthcoming trip to San Antonio, kind words about how the folks at home felt about us. One of the most thrilling of all was Mrs. Alvin Bippus of Toledo, Ohio, who's made it so interesting for children from kindergarten through the 8th grade go to the museums that the average Toledo child now makes 6 visits a year to the museum. Art cannot exist in a vacuum. It's people liking it that makes it important, it seems to me. My hat was off to Mrs. Bippus. And then there was a Miss Marie Larkin. Her award was because she was an original thinker in the field of art education for children. "One of the greatest needs of our society," she said, "is to teach people to be intelligently alone with themselves. And the art museum provides a resource for all in that respect." That struck a very responsive chord in me. All in all, it was a thrilling series of citations for various works in the world of art, and I was mighty proud to participate. We'd invited the senators and the congressmen of each of the award winners. A great many of them were there, the Frank Churches, John Sherman Coopers, no surprise, the Peter Frelinghuysens. They are usually present at anything that's art-minded. Vance Hartke, Abigail and Jean McCarthy, the McGoverns, the attractive young William Moorheads, the Hugh Scotts of Pennsylvania, Leonora Sullivan, one of the women members who works at her job, in a very thorough fashion, it seems to me, and Mrs. John Tower. It was a good representation of Congress there, to my surprise, since it was the middle of the afternoon. I'd invited Mary's stepdaughter and stepson-in-law, the Sidney Brodies. She's on the art board in Los Angeles, California, at their wonderful museum. And very patrician Mrs. Adeline Breeskin. There were quite a few of the donors of the Mellon Gallery there, various members of the Kress family. Some, I noticed, came from Texas. And a brace of the Havemeyer family. And some donors to the White House, too. Young Richard Dietrich. But I was sorry I didn't get to meet the girl he's engaged to, the daughter of the Nicholas Biddles. She was at home sick. That was Bobby Lehman, who had given me such an enchanting day, going through his own home in New York. It is really a museum. And the Charles Engelhards, Nancy Kiefhofer, was decorating embassies. And I'd asked some friends of my own to see the White House in action. Mary Johnson Hazelton, Miss Genevieve Hendricks, an art group ought to be her cup of tea. And some young people, including the new in-law of the family, Molly Schulman, whose brother married Becky, her date, Philip Patman, Peggy Pickle and her date, and the extremely elegant daughter of Jane Engelhard, Mrs. Samuel Reed. We ask art critics, Mr. Taubman, Mr. Getline, Miss Winchester from Antiques Magazine, and museum directors, a cross-section of people who, for love or money or knowledge, are a part of the world of art. After the last award was handed out, I received everyone in the Blue Room, and then we went into the state dining room for refreshments. Irish whiskey for St. Patrick's Day. The first time it's been served in the White House, I'll bet. And not a soul wanted tea. It was a smashing success. I covered the room visiting. Mr. Paul Mellon stood by me and introduced a great many of the guests. And I was one of the last to leave myself about 4:30. With a bit of time to rest in between, before Charles and Jane Engelhard and Senator Mansfield and Maureen came up. With Lyndon, we weren't going to be able to go to their birthday party tonight, because I was going to the Mellon dinner. Lyndon had a book of American history and a late picture for his birthday present. We had a half hour's visit. Jane Engelhard and Charles looked at the glossy of the Winslow Homer. James Fosberg had told them about it. But I am no salesman, and I really think it's too expensive. I am always amazed at how much Lyndon makes his time count each moment. He was charming to Senator Mansfield. He truly likes for his own birthday to be noticed, and he was practically spooning the icing on the cake for Senator Mansfield's birthday in the brief half hour we spent together. It was just time to put on my lovely new dress, gold brocade from Pakistan, made up by Molly Parnes, and have a hair comb before I left alone for the Mellon dinner at the Sulgrave Club. There were pictures as I entered, but no coverage inside, a rule of the club's, which makes for a genuinely relaxed evening. The invitation had said, a small dinner party. There were about 100. From the cabinet, Fowler's and the Udalls. From the Congress, Bill and Betty Fulbright. Clint and Henrietta Anderson. He's looking quite old. They're both my dear favorites. And the George and Helen Mahons. He's on the Smithsonian board, I believe it is. And rather to my amazement, very often shows up at art gatherings. And there were ever so many donors to the gallery, Havemeyers and Cresses, and Mrs. Chester Dale. To quote Charlotte Curtis, elegant, diamond and emerald decked. The Norman Cousins, we spoke of Jack Valenti. They said he's a voracious reader with obvious admiration. And the French ambassador and Madame Lucey, all the paintings are French impressionist. It's so fitting for them to come. The Winthrop Aldriches, a charming museum curator, Mr. Robertson of Virginia, who made me want to come down to Virginia to see what he's done. I love sitting next to Paul Mellon at dinner. We talked about the genesis of the National Gallery, his father's collecting, his decision to turn it over to the country, my own personal vignette of memory, is hearing Bob Jackson talk about it back when Lyndon, I think, was a congressional secretary in early 35. Somehow or other, working for Senator Tom Connolly, he had seen the pictures that would become a part of the gallery. A delicious, beautifully done dinner, and then toast, few but good. The most amusing by Mellon himself. He's often called retiring or shy. Tonight he was delightful. He talked about the comic strip Peanuts, Snoopy the dog was on top of his doghouse, and voices were wafted up to him through the door. After other remarks, one of the voices says, "Look over there. I bet that's something you never expected to see." And another voice says, "Fantastic." After which Snoopy says, "I can always tell when they have come to my Van Gogh." And then he went on to a limerick made up by himself, which I like because it also covers my predicament. "I'll never with confidence know if Van Gogh is Van Gogh or Van Gogh. I admit to my shame this chameleon name makes my highbrows feel terribly low. But a friend of mine said off the cuff, you might say that his name was Van Gogh. But regardless, I fear what he did to his ear was playing a little too rough." The opening was scheduled for about 9:30. We were late getting there. In fact, it was close to 10:20 when we arrived, Mr. and Mrs. Paul Mellon and Johnny Walker riding with me. We went up in the elevator, didn't run the night of the Mona Lisa opening. John Walker says he still has a Mona Lisa ulcer. There in that magnificent gallery to see the 200 or more canvases were about 9,000 people filling the halls and rooms and courtyards, listening to the three orchestras. It was a great spectacle. I tried to rise to the occasion. I had worn my inaugural coat over my Ayub Khan gown. It was a sort of a Cinderella deal because I was going to try to get it off on the earliest morning plane to Linda Bird in Hollywood so she could wear it that night for a cocktail party. I was escorted along by John Walker, our Mr. or Mrs. Mellon. Mrs. Elsa Mellon Bruce, who had been our co-hostess, the Sawgrave, had not come along for the gallery. She had been ill. Many of the guests did not come to brave the crowd. I, happily, had already seen all the paintings, had absorbed all the beauty, and so could just look and respond to, I hoped, the crowd. I signed the guest book. The most recent official signer was Britain's Princess Margaret, last November. Then we toured the long marble halls. Occasionally I waved at people I knew, the Oscar Coxes, Reno Basel, Mrs. John Davis Lodge. Mrs. Mellon looked really stunning. Her hair a beautiful mass of curls, done, I later read in the paper, by Kenneth, famous to a lot of people, and wearing, so Charlotte Curtis said, quite viciously, a shimmering turquoise and white Balenciaga dress that wouldn't stay snapped in back, diamond and pearl jewelry, and false eyelashes. There are times when I think it's worth it to stay just a mouse in the world of fashion. It was purely a public show. About 45 minutes of flashing bulbs, smiling and greeting, walking and making appropriate, I hope, remarks, saying goodbye to John Walker with, "I congratulate you on a marvelous quarter of a century of beauty and service for the gallery." And one of the nicest things I remember was a toast to Andrew Mellon, who after all made it all possible. And then, good night to John Walker and the Paul Mellons with great gratitude. It had been a glowing evening in my life, and back at the White House a little past 11. Lyndon laughs a little bit at my forays into the world of art. I genuinely enjoy them, but perhaps they consider me totally alien. There was an interesting article in the New York Times about Congress and the arts by Howard Taubman. "Honeymoon continues with emphasis on philosophy rather than expenses. To judge by last week's hearing before a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee in Washington, love, as Wintergreen predicted in Off the Ice saying, is still sweeping the country." Senator Gale McGee of Wyoming was in the chair as committeeman, representing the majesty of the Senate. I gather that Taubman thinks the amiable climate toward art is very praiseworthy, but may not amount to much in the sums involved, and also fears that they may meddle in how the grants are spent. I'd had a moment with Mrs. Mellon to tell her that the Magnolia Selangiana, four of them in the Rose Garden, were full of fat, soft, fuzzy buds, some of them showing a little purplish pink, but that one in the Jacqueline Kennedy garden looked like a bare, drear skeleton. She said, "Let's get together and talk about it. The planting all over the grounds, I'd love it." All in all, it was a day precious to me, afforded entirely by my role here in the White House, and not earned by my knowledge or myself.